Ladies and gentlemen, if you know the answers to these questions, you've got it. You're on the Inside Track. Does a fighter hear ringside remarks? Do club owners know their baseball? Where are the best javelin hurlers? This is Fred Hessler. You'll hear the answers to these questions and more with the men who know, those who make the sports headlines. For this is the Inside Track. And now, tape recorded, the Inside Track to heavyweight fighter Jimmy Bivens, St. Louis Browns Vice President Charlie DeWitt, and former track star Dick Ganslin, with yours truly, Fred Hessler. A heavyweight who has been a professional for more than 11 years is Jimmy Bivens. Jimmy has fought all of today's top heavies. As a matter of fact, Jimmy Bivens has defeated most of them, including the successor to Joe Louis' crown, Ezzard Charles. To get the inside track to the present picture of boxing, we asked Jimmy to rate today's heavyweights.
So the heavyweight group today is just about like it was before, but Ezzard Charles now is living in the ghost of Joe Louis. See, and that makes him look obsolete out there, you know, but he's a great fighter. Maxim, a great fighter. Practically all of them are good fighters, but just still living in the shadow of Joe Louis and other great fighters in the past.
Mm-hmm. And how about Joe himself?
He's not the man he used to be.
And he's getting pretty old now, of course, that's for sure. Jimmy, I'd like to ask you about another angle, and that is you've been fighting for a long time. Suppose you get a shot at the title. How long would you continue fighting, do you think?
Well, I'd get the title, I'd pick up a couple of bucks, and then give it up. Let the next best man try to carry the burden on his shoulder.
You still make your home in Cleveland?
Yeah.
How about, do you have any side enterprises in Cleveland, like a lot of the other fighters have picked up restaurants, so on down the line?
Oh, no, I conserve my money by not investing it, and I got a trust fund started.
In other words, you stuck to fighting all the way through and none of the sidelines.
No.
Jimmy, in boxing, in general today, where do you find the best fight crowds are? Now, you've been fighting in a lot of cities. Do you think that there are any towns in the USA that are a little better boxing towns than others?
Well, I think the eastern states, you know, they go for baseball and boxing. Well, it seems like out west here in California state, just go for wrestling and horse race.
Well, I think you might have a pretty good point right there, Jimmy. How about your family life now? Do you have a family, Jimmy, or have you stayed single?
No, I've been married, and I have a little boy. But at the present, I'm single.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I get your point right there. Now, you have to move around quite a bit in this business, don't you?
Yes, that's why, you know, I think all fighters should be married, but should wait till they get almost through with their career, because they're always going and never have time with their family.
Yeah, that makes a pretty rough situation. You're moving around. Now, how many fights have you had all told in your professional career? You any idea?
Over a period of 10 years, close to 100.
Do you usually go out of training completely when you're not fighting?
No, I never, let myself all the way down. Well, a couple of days a week, I go to gym, and the other few days a week, I might take hikes and do a little jogging to keep in condition.
Mm-hmm. Now, how about preparing for a pretty good fight? Let's say if you were meeting somebody of the caliber of an Ezzard Charles in, a title fight, but a very important fight, and most of yours these days would be important, what kind of a training routine do you go through then?
Well,
normally
they would send us up to a training camp. That would be from away from everyone, up in the woods someplace. We eat practically raw meat and get up, run. Nothing but a whole routine of relaxation up there with plenty of boxing.
That sounds like quite a tough one. Now, in your road work, how many miles do you usually cover?
Well, a lot of folks are always the first thing they ask you, how many miles you generally cover, you know. It's not the idea how many miles you cover. It's how long you stay out in that morning air, that fresh air in the morning, see? You get out there, you stay about 45 minutes to an hour. But during that time, you be working up a sweat and moving all the time you're out there, see?
That makes a lot of sense, Jim.
Yes.
Mm-hmm. What's your favorite training camp, by the way?
Well, I like Summit, New Jersey best.
Do you?
The former Madam May camp.
Uh-huh. That's a pretty good spot, huh?
Yes, it is.
Jimmy, do you ever notice anything when you're in the ring during a fight? Do you ever notice crowd reactions at all? Are you ever aware of it?
Well, you alert to crowd reactions. Sometimes they boo you, and sometimes they say funny remarks to you, you know, but
do you ever
that's
hear
part
him?
Of the game. Oh, yeah, you hear them.
Do they make any difference to you at all? Do you remember any that they've made to you that have...
Oh, no, I've heard a lot of smart remarks and a lot of jokes, you know. They ask you, who you waving at and stuff like that, you know. Like you threw a punch and missed the guy. They'll be stuck. Look at him waving. Look like a Statue of Liberty or something standing up there. You know, smart remark. But you shrug them off, see.
You get used to that.
Yes.
How about the crowd reaction after a fight, for example, when you've won a decision that isn't popular with the crowd?
Well, most of the time, see, you get booed, but the crowd reaction I noticed the most is whether you win or lose, you know, you got some people that's right with you. But they all go, most of them go for the winner. Like, for instance, you win a big fight, they're all in your corner. Let you lose the fight, you don't see a soul in your corner, just your close admirers.
Jimmy, who's been your manager all the way through? Have you had several
managers? Same person I have now is still my same. It was Claude Shane of Cleveland, so he, this jewelry business kept him from going around with me, so he had me with this New York representative, Ollie Zack.
Mm-hmm.
But Claude Shane is still my manager.
He's been with you all the way through?
Yes, all the way from amateur.
How about trainers and so on? Have you kept the same trainer all the way through?
Well, I've had a few trainers. My latest was Johnny Papke, and he still is working with me, but he just couldn't make the trip this time.
Mm-hmm. Does it help you if you have the same crew with you all the time? Does it give you a lot of confidence?
It helps a lot, but see, when the bell rings, you're on your own.
And that's the inside track to Boxing with Heavyweight Jimmy Bivens. What's your particular problem in baseball? That question has been asked of thousands of ball players, managers, coaches, and umpires. But seldom do the club owners get into that particular act. We ask Charlie DeWitt to tell us some of the headaches he's had as vice president and part owner of the St. Louis Browns.
Well, I don't imagine our problems are any different than any other businessman. We have all of the problems of the everyday business, and then, too, we have the problem of trying to win ball games. It's one of the most fascinating and thrilling businesses I can imagine. I've been in it since I was a kid. I don't know what I'd do without the thrill that goes with baseball, and... the fans get a terrific bang out of it. That's why the ballparks are so big. So you can imagine if you got your money riding on it, it's that much more thrilling. One of the most interesting parts of running professional baseball clubs, and particularly in the day of the chain operation, the farm system, it's like raising a family. You start out with these boys 17 and 18 years old, and you watch them develop. Some of them don't, of course, but you watch them develop into young men, into mature men. Some of them become very fine boys. Other fellows fall by the wayside. But it's exceptionally thrilling. It's an exceptional, thrilling experience to see one of them come and become an outstanding player and to develop into a fine young American man. If we had been able to draw well in St. Louis for the past 5 or 6 years, we would have an outstanding ball club now. Because, as you know, we had to sell ball players to keep our balance sheet in the black figure. We sold players at which we realized over $1 million. To put the club on a sound financial basis, and we have it there now. But if we hadn't developed those players, we couldn't have raised that money, and now we've developed a new crop. As you will see, Roy Seavers and Ned Garver, Sherman Lawler, yeah. Ken Wood, and there are some others coming along in this present crop out here.
That's the inside track to baseball with Charlie DeWitt. We We've often wondered why it is that Finland seems to come up with so many javelin-throwing champions. It's just about as traditional for Finland to reign supreme in the javelin as it is for the United States to win in other forms of track competition, such as the pole vault. However, we found a man who has an answer to this javelin question. He is Dick Ganslin, former track star, now a physiological advisor in athletics at the University of Illinois. Dick says this about the Finnish javelin hurlers.
Well, I spent about 1 month living with Matti Järvinen, the world's record holder, 7 or 8 times in the javelin throw, and we threw the javelin 7 times. I'm not much of a javelin thrower, but I was interested from a mechanical viewpoint, and I made several motion films of Järvinen in action. Järvinen's attitude was that to begin javelin throwing and be a great javelin thrower, you've got to start the boys early. So they have all sizes of javelins for girls and for boys in Finland, from 5 foot lengths to the standard 8.5 feet length. And they start throwing the javelin for form in the first 5 or 6 years. They don't throw much for distance. They don't emphasize the distance with the schoolboys and high school boys and so on. So when a boy gets to be about 18 or 19, he has his form pretty well mastered. Then they start to build up his strength. Järvinen trained himself. And he did a tremendous amount of bodybuilding work with ski poles, for example. In the wintertime, he would walk and pull himself along by ski poles. And he told me that before he won the Olympics here in 32 at Los Angeles, that he estimates that he must have pushed down on his ski poles 10,000 times at a minimum. Of course, Järvinen, who was a big man of 196.2, came from an athletic family. His father was an Olympic athlete before him. He and his brother, Aki Järvinen, was also an Olympic athlete at 32 Olympics. Their concept of the form and mechanics of javelin throwing is about at the same stage as our understanding the mechanics possibly of pole vaulting in this country. We have studied it very extensively, and they have studied the javelin mechanics. And when you would go to a track meet in Finland, and I'd say to Matti, well, should I take a motion picture film of this boy throwing the javelin? He would say, no, he's not a very good boy. He can't throw more than 220. And his form is not so good. They consider a 225-foot javelin throw as very mediocre. And they say, well, the boy has promise if he throws 220. And they expect 230, 235 in every meet. And Rautavaara is 35 years of age. He'll throw over 230 every year.
That's amazing, too.
They throw the javelin very seldom for distance in actual practice. They throw always for form. They do a tremendous amount of running. Many javelin throwers in this country think that running is unnecessary. They work on the mechanics of their step and the carry of the javelin, so it's very relaxed. And so that their motions are perfectly smooth before they throw the javelin. Many of our men learn to run, but they run up to the javelin throwing line like an express train, and when they start to hop, they lose all their speed and rhythm. The rhythmic concept, I suppose, in javelin throwing must be very exact. According to Järvinen, the rhythm is much more important than just the idea of coming up to the mark fast. He said that it's much better to come up at a moderate speed to your mark to throw the javelin and get your movements perfectly blended than it is to come up with tremendous speed and then in hopping and cross-stepping lose all your initial impetus and then have your throw fall off because of that fact. And he himself now is 40 years of age. He can routinely throw over 210 feet. And if he was forced to and there was sufficient motivation, he threw, I think, last year at the age of 40 in some meet in Finland, something like 222 feet, and listed one of the best 15 performances in the world at the age of 40, and it's recreational pursuit with him.
That's the inside track to heavyweight boxer Jimmy Bivens, baseball club owner Charlie DeWitt, and former track star Dick Ganslin with yours truly, Fred Hessler. Don Ferris was at the organ. Listen again for answers to leading sports questions with the men and women who know, those who make the sports headlines. For this is the Inside Track. This is the United States Armed Forces Radio Service, the voice of information and education.